everyone, and welcome to episode 64 of season 11 of Movie Room Minute, the Daily Podcast, where we curry our way through the 2001 award-winning HBO miniseries Band of Brothers, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Lee Colley, a movie buff and actor. Welcome back to the show, Lee.
Thank you, Rob. Very, very, very happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad. You know, we had a nice conversation yesterday, so I'm glad that you decided to come back to continue our conversation.
It was entertaining, but it was also an education, which I always appreciate.
Well, that's the way it's supposed to be. You know, the whole idea is that you can, you know, do more than one thing at the same time. So,
absolutely. Yeah.
Why not?
Indeed.
Why not? I don't have a problem with that. As far as I'm concerned, that's the way this should be. You know, I want this to be.
Yeah.
I don't want this to be to feel to people that this is a lecture. You know, it's a conversation. Things that are going on. You know, about fun things about Band of Brothers and things like that. So why not?
No, you're very well researched. You know, when I was kind of, that hadn't occurred to me. I since went and went, oh, okay, right. I do remember specifically now that John Wayne was in the film, but at the time it wasn't kind of like playing on my mind. So yeah, all this works for me. This is all good. All good.
Okay, that's good. So, you know, maybe you'll get another John Wayne question today. You never know. Because today you're going to have even more questions.
Fantastic. Look forward to it.
Because today you have 5 trivia questions in addition to the, name that World War II movie.
Okay. So, look forward to it.
You never know. You never know. It's hopefully it'll work well. So episode 64 begins with Winters staring back at Buck and ends with Babe being completely shocked. So, you know, yesterday we finished things with everyone finding out that, you know, right now the movie's over.
Yeah.
You know, everyone dispersed. We're actually going to be moving into Bestone. So
yes.
You know, the guys are both happy and sad at the same time. You know, because they want to get this war done with already, and especially after, you know, having dealt with everything during Market Garden. You know, they were hoping to be done by Christmas, and maybe that's not what's going to happen. So
yeah.
And, you know, we had the small conversation between Winters and Buck, where, you know, this is where they're starting to show that Buck has been really affected by everything that he's gone through. Even though I know that the real Buck Compton has was a little upset about the way that he was portrayed here, because he believes that they unfairly portrayed his character this way.
Really? All right. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's basically when they're watching, he's very sort of seems to be completely isolated from everyone else. He's obviously clearly affected. Yeah. So he's trying his best to kind of make some communication with him. And I don't think he responds until maybe like the third or fourth interaction. And then he sort of looks like he's in a daze, or he's sort of not completely there. So that's interesting that he wasn't particularly thinking that was an accurate portrayal.
Right. Okay. No, because from what I understand, he was actually taken off the line because of trench foot, not because he was shell-shocked.
I see. Which is a very different thing.
Right. And, but whatever. I mean, obviously they do have to take poetic license here. They do have to change things a little bit just to make it a little more interesting. It's possible that they merged part of Buck's personality with other characters, you know, with other people who possibly did have the same issue.
Yes.
So, I mean, I can understand from that perspective.
Yeah, because this episode seems to be rather a strong depiction of post-traumatic stress, it seems, I think, for a lot of the characters. So that would make sense that they kind of bring in another character to kind of over sort of, not kind of over sort of play it, but basically to kind of say, look, this was so widespread, and something that obviously we didn't realize until way after the event, I think, even after the First World War, I think it wasn't kind of considered what we now obviously know to be mental torment of war or post-traumatic stress that obviously is as debilitating as any physical kind of illness or impairment. So yeah, I can understand why when they were creating it, they wanted to kind of show an array of characters probably going through this, and ones that probably you thought were quite stoic, and maybe ones that you thought maybe they were ones that were less affected. So I can understand the artistic license being taken on that front then.
Right. Okay. I mean, again, it makes sense. And I've said this many times, that what they attempted and relatively succeeded in doing with Band of Brothers was to tell a more global story of everything that happened by just focusing on these select men, you know, that's the thing.
Yes.
And you know, it if they really wanted to, they would have been able to make numerous miniseries about, you know, about everything that happened by focusing on different characters and stuff like that. They could have done a second season focusing on another 10 characters or 20 characters or whatever it is. Yeah. And it would have been very unique, would have been very different. So the idea was is that, yeah, they still had to find a way to connect together all of these characters. And I mean, there were what, 400 guys in Easy Company, or 350, something like that. So, you know, you can't depict them all. So you're going to make amalgamations of characters. And it, yeah, seems that that's what they did here, from this perspective. You know, the character might be named Buck Compton, but there could be attributes to this character of Buck Compton that are not the real Buck Compton, you know, that are taken from someone else who was suffering from some sort of PTSD at the time.
Yeah, certainly.
So, I mean, from that perspective, yeah, I think it makes sense. I'm sorry for the real Buck Compton. that this was, yes, the way that he perceived it, you know. But
sure, I mean, I get, if you've never been involved in a production or something, then you might not know that this happens time and time again. So it might have been a bit of a kind of a shock to the system. But unfortunately, however you were, what side of the coin you fall on, it's par for the course. It happens all the time in many different projects, I think.
Yeah, of course. I mean, one of the whole things also is the fact that, you know, you as an actor, I'm assuming you've played roles that are real people also, not just fictional characters, right? Or
right.
So from that perspective, you know, they need to take liberties along the way.
Yeah, and I mean, and depending on how size your role is, you might even meet that person if they're still alive, so you can have like some kind of conversation and then have some further kind of reflection that perhaps you don't get from the script and from an artistic point of view. But I mean, 9 times out of 10, I will say this, their research and the departments that go into all of the work before it's basically the camera's roll is so thorough that, you know, it's done with the utmost sensitivity. So I would say that. So yeah, so again, feel for Buck. Hey, you know, hopefully, other than that, he can appreciate the series of, you know, the rest of his portrayal, which is, I think, very kind of strong and clearly a very brave and a really sort of memorable character amongst many of the Easy Company of attack.
Right. No, I agree. I agree. And also because, I mean, one of the things that we've learned a lot about Buck from the first episode already, or from the first part. I always get confused as to parts, episodes, stuff like that. From the first part of the miniseries, you know, the fact that Buck joined them after they finished in Tekoa. So the whole idea was is that he is part of them, but he's still missing part of the experience that all the others had. So he has a little bit of distance between them, you know, from that perspective.
Yes,
so that's why that also makes him quite unique, because he's someone who everyone is very friendly with, everyone gets along with really well, even though he hadn't, yes, been part of the original main core type of thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, you know, that's understandable from that perspective. So basically, we get about 20 seconds of wordless interactions between both Winters and Buck. And then Winters eventually leaves the room, and then Buck leaves the room. And, you know, it has a nice fade, and we get a shot of the full moon, you know, telling us that we are now right in the middle of the month, more or less. And then we see that Winters is walking, and Peacock walks up to him and goes, "Sir, Lieutenant Peacock, sir, have you seen Colonel Stryer?" And then Winter goes, "Where's the company commander?" And he goes, "Lieutenant Dyke? I've been looking for him all day."
Yeah.
He goes, "How is it that the Fourth Army's probably going to get dumped on the airborne?" And then Dyke shows up and goes, "Lieutenant Peacock, Lieutenant Compton, Captain Winters. Oh, listen, Dyke. Oh, Lieutenant Dyke, I've been looking for you. Sir, we have a problem. Colonel Stryer is not yet returned from some wedding that he's attending in London. Can you believe that? We're going to the front, and our CO isn't even in the same damn country." Winters goes, "You have a bigger problem, Lieutenant Dyke. You have men returning to action without proper cold weather clothing and not enough ammo." "Sir?"
Yeah.
He goes, "I suggest you take a canvas of the entire base. Get what materials you have before we roll out. Or have you done that already?" "No, sir. Air rations, as many as you can scrounge. We don't know if we'll be resupplied or not." "Yes, sir. What about ammo?" Peacock says. Winters goes, "There's no more ammo. Distribute amongst the men as best as you can, so at least everyone has something." Dyke then says, "Yes, sir. Lieutenant Compton, Lieutenant Peacock, inform Lieutenant Shames of the situation. Get all your platoons as best equipped as you can, and then report back here to me. Understood?" And both Peacock and Buck respond, "Yes, sir." And then you get a look from Winters, who's giving, you know, Dyke a look here. And then, you know, because basically what we're seeing here is this, once again, Winters is doing what he can to protect the Easy as much as possible. And, you know, he's not happy about the fact that he's no longer in charge of Easy and that it's Dyke who's now in charge of Easy. But, okay, there's nothing he can do about that. You know, he's moved on. But he still is trying as best as possible to protect his men. And what he sees that Dyke is doing is Dyke is not acting the way that he would act. But he also isn't able to reprimand Dyke in front of everyone, even, about the fact that you know that he's not doing things the way that he should be doing. You know, so Winters is giving hints as to what needs to be done, or he's actually telling it outright, saying, "Okay, this is what you need to do." And Dyke is like, "Oh, okay, of course. Of course this is what we need to do." And then he just looks at the two men under him and says, "Okay, you both take care of it." Meaning this is a great way to, pun intended, pass the buck, you know, because he is giving it back to Buck and Peacock to take care of it. And it's, I mean, it's ironic the way that this is being done, because both Buck and Peacock don't know how to even really respond here, besides saying, "Yes, sir." And then, you know, at this point, Dyke then turns to Winters and says, "Captain." And then the shot changes. But I mean, I like this because it once again shows us Winters' dedication to the men of Easy, which is something that lasted, you know, for 60 years after the war ended, more even. You know, it lasted until Winters no longer was able to function. But it's just unbelievable the dedication that he had to these men that he spent, you know, a very important part of his life with, obviously. You know, I'm not belittling that at all, but you know, but they're able to really show that here in the miniseries, that we constantly see how much Winters is looking out for everybody, and it's great.
Yeah, and I think I love about this episode is that the way that Winters, we have little vignettes of moments of seeing how he basically led the men. I think earlier on in the episode where it's Mouse, basically where he takes the ammo off him, the way that he deals with that situation, someone that is clearly slightly not not a loose cannon as such, but it's somebody that he knows, you know what, I don't think I should leave him in this present state because he might end up killing those prisoners. And the way that he deals with that in a way is so, I think,
Ah, you're talking about, no,
so
you're talking about Leave
typical
That. You were
of
talking about Leave
how.
That.
Leave
That
That, sorry,
movie.
yeah, apologies, yeah. That moment I think is so good because it just shows from the one moment he's sort of like he's very calm and very considered, and then he goes, no, give me your ammo, and he takes the ammo off him and gives him the gun, leaves him with
Correct.
one bullet, I think, and basically says, if you kill the man, if you kill one of them, they'll all come for you or something. And the way that he delivers that, it juxtaposed with all that kind of moment where he's doing all the administrative work, where he's having the flashbacks and stuff, just shows for me in this episode particularly the different facets of his character. And I think it's so beautifully realized. And like the moment you're just talking about now, again, there's somebody that is showing again his leadership qualities, even if he cannot impart his kind of what he would instinctively like to do. He's got to sit back, observe to a point, but then also get his message across as well at the same time without undermining Dyke at the same time. I think it's just some lovely moments all the way through this episode where we see Winters and the way that the camera sort of like just pans and then hits basically what's going on internally with him, obviously. And yeah, just, and I think with the talking heads, they always talk about, you know, how they would have gone anywhere for him, basically, that he led with such a sense of, you just knew that you were in really good hands, and he would be the first person to go. He wouldn't be, you know, send someone before he did, and you know, all of those aspects, I think, are just completely encompassed in this episode for me,
100%.
anyway.
I mean, again, the story with Leave God is, I mean, I read it from the book at the time. I mean, it really happened. You know, he really did it that way, and that in itself is also amazing. You know, the fact that
Definitely.
he decided that, okay, this is what we're, you know, I need to do the right thing, even if I see that one of my men is possibly not going to be doing the right thing. You know, because
Yeah,
obviously that
definitely.
whole story is somewhat detrimental to Leave God.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it's not a good,
Know, doesn't
definitely
show
not.
him in.
No.
Again, I won't go as so far as to say it doesn't show him in a good light. But what I'm saying is that it shows the reality of stuff that's going on the ground. You know, we do have it. We've had it with so
Yeah, I
many of the
mean, you
characters. I
know.
mean, we had it with Garnier. You know, the fact that he found out his brother died, and then, you know, in the second part, you know, we see how he is, you know, enacting his rage on the, you know, on whatever Germans they find.
And sadly, that, you know, the case of that, you know, during the Afghanistan war and the Iraq war, you know, it came to light that the soldiers were, there were certain soldiers still kind of behaving in that manner. They get affected in certain ways. So yeah, it's a haunting aspect, but sadly it's an all true
No,
aspect, I guess.
I
And
agree.
yeah,
I agree.
you know.
And then the shot changes, and we get to see a whole bunch of trucks just riding down the road, driving down the road.
Yes.
Again, it's beautifully
Yeah.
shot because it starts off with a perspective of the road itself. And you see, like, at the wheels of one of the trucks, and you see the other trucks following. And then it gives us another shot on the ground as the trucks pass by, and then, you know, we see the whole convoy coming through with a lot of these men, and we see that, you know, we get another shot from one of the cabs of the of a truck, and then the camera pans, and we can see the back of another truck where a whole bunch of the men of Easy are sitting and you know, talking through everything that they're going on here, whether this is going on here. And we can see Garnier, we can see Buck, we can see Leave God. And you know, these guys are all just you know, trying to figure out what's next for them.
Ammo, have you got coke? What, have you got X, Y, and Z? And I think he's got cigarettes or
Yeah, this
something.
is
I think,
the
is
cigarettes.
that the
Yeah.
moment with? in where, the battle truck, I think it is.
You know, Buck says the blackout's not in effect.
Yeah, yeah.
Luftwaffe must be asleep. What a difference a day makes. Huh, Lieutenant? And he goes, then Garner goes, Christ, I miss those C-47s. And you've got a tailgate jump here. So, I mean, the guys are in the back, and they're having this whole conversation, and they're trying to figure out, about it. It's nice that they talk about the idea of, you know, about a blackout being in effect, because, they're basically telling us that what's going on here is that these guys are basically in the back of a truck, and, you know, if you want to have blackout, then, you know, the planes won't know where you are. That's the whole point. You know, the enemy can't see you. Or hopefully they can't see you,
yes.
Especially not from above. But you know, as far as they're concerned here, you know, it doesn't really matter. And so these guys will start just lighting up, lighting up the cigarettes. And that's when Babe says, "I just want to know where they're sending us. What the hell are we supposed to do with no ammo?" And Garnier then turns to one of the new guys and goes, "Hey kid, what's your name again?" He goes, "Swirth, Swirth Jr." "Got any ammo, Junior?" He goes, "Just what I'm carrying." "What about socks, Junior? You got extra socks?" He goes, "A pair." And then Cobb jumps in and goes, "You need four, minimum. Feet, hands, neck, balls." And then all of them say together, "Extra socks warms them all."
It's nice, isn't it? Because again, that again depicts that, you know, without being too kind of like trite, but band of brothers, they're kind of, I hate the word banter, but they're sort of, their kind of interactions is kind of lightly teasing, like sort of, you can see that in light of obviously what they've now been deployed into, this kind of situation where they've got very little supplies and they're in these really kind of harsh conditions, that actually they can keep their spirits up. Right. They can kind of keep each other sort of cajoled within there.
Because it's the connection these guys have.
There's nice little moments.
It's great. You're right. I mean, that's why these moments are so important to add into this to this type of series. You know, where we can see, okay, these guys are really connected.
Yeah,
they're
definitely
connected well. And you know, and even when there's a new guy who shows up, they're finding ways to bring them into the fold. Yeah, they're not saying, "Oh, you're a new guy, we don't care about you." They're like, "All right, you're a new guy. You can maybe help us. You know, and at the same time, we're going to help you." And then they says, "Okay, we all remember that one.
Yes.
But did we remember the socks?" And then Garnier says, "Get my goddamn boots for a cigarette. We're all out of ammo and socks." And Garnier goes, "Anybody got a cigarette?" And they go, "I bet Junior's got plenty of both. Because I don't. How about a hat? You got a hat? And, hey, you got extra ammo? What about a coat? Got a coat?" "Yo, shut up with the coat. No one's got one." "How about smokes then?" "Yeah, I got some smokes." "Now you're talking. Hey, toss it up. Pass them down. And then he goes, "Somebody give me a light." So again, this is adding to the, camaraderie of the guys by showing all this. You know, I guess it's somewhat of a way of initiating the new guy by, you know, having him give them some of his cigarettes and stuff like that.
Yeah, like gently rib him to begin with, and then go, "Look, you know, you're part of the gang. This is how it is, and we'll look after you, et cetera, et cetera." So yeah, that was it's great. I love it. There are loads of moments throughout the series of that.
But, yeah, completely. Yes. And then we get a shot of a whole bunch of MPs at the edge of the road. Directing traffic more or less.
Yes.
Telling them where they need to go. And the trucks turn off to the left. And you see that there are MPs all around, all down the line, directing the traffic until they reach a point where all the trucks park and everyone starts getting out of the trucks.
Yeah.
Which is also great. Because you can recognize a lot of the guys from Easy here, not just the guys who are just talking right now. You know, when they're all coming out of the trucks and trying to figure out where they are and what they're going to have to do. But the one thing they do know is that they're all going into a situation where where they don't really they're not happy.
Definitely not.
It's not simple.
No, not at all. No.
And then we see somebody take a jerry can of fuel and put them into like pits in the ground, and someone just lights them on fire, and the men start walking over just to get a little bit of heat. And then we see a Jeep pull up, and we can see in the background that there's a sign that says Paris. I think it says 360, 61. I'm pretty sure that's what it says. I'm not sure if it's just, it's probably not 36. I don't think they're 36 kilometers from Paris. It's probably 361. Makes a little more sense. And Nixon then gets out of the Jeep, and he turns to the guy, to his driver, and goes, "Wait right here. Don't go anywhere." And then Nixon and Winters both get out of the Jeep. They walk over to the Jeep where Colonel Sink is, and they start a conversation with him. And Sink says to them, "Welcome to Belgium. This area is known as Bastogne, strategic crossroads town. Seven roads leading in, seven roads leading out, which makes it ideal for Kraut armor. Now, Ike wants to make sure that the Krauts can't use these roads. So we're going to put a perimeter around Bastogne. Dig in tight as a tick. Second battalion will be deployed over here to the east." And, as he's talking, Strayer then shows up. And he goes, "Thank God, barely made it."
Yeah.
And, what's great is that... you can see that Strayer's dressed in his dress uniform.
He's one of my favorite characters because he pops in and like he just has his kind of grand entrance and he disappears again and he's in a little kind of moment and then he's gone again. It's such a I remember that moment particularly where they arrive in the Jeep and obviously you've got Colonel Sink, Dale Dye basically doing his explanation of what the crossroads are with the seven roads leading in, seven roads leading out, and then my God, barely made it. Just disappears again. So happens I think early on in the episode.
That's right.
It's great.
And then, right, and then Sink says to him, "Better get yourself some ODs, Bob." Okay. basically, he's telling him change into more comfortable attire.
That's cool.
That's the way it is. And then Sink just continues with his briefing of Winters and Nixon. He goes, "First battalion's to the north on your left flank. Third battalion's in reserve." And then he goes, "Andy, let's roll." And Winter says to him, "Sir, we're a little short on ammunition." He goes, "How short?" "There's a limited supply in camp, sir." "Captain, you beg, borrow, or steal ammo, but you defend this area." "Yes, sir." "Yes, sir." So, again, it's, Sink realizes that there's an issue, but he also realizes that there's nothing he can do right now. So he needs to help them as much as possible with this type of thing.
Yeah, definitely.
And, as a commander, he still gets in his Jeep and is getting ready to leave. But he's like, "All right, this is still what you got to do." I don't care.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
And it amazes me the fact that how unprepared they were for this. We'll see tomorrow how things will change a little bit, but you'd think that Sink at least has been updated as to what's going on. But obviously it's information that trickles down. So if Sink doesn't know it, then no one else knows it.
I see him unfolding it,
and that's not good.
And I guess
it's a problem.
The nature of being in war is that events happen probably at such a rate of knots that maybe your preparation isn't as thorough as you want it to be. And you, as Sink says, beg, borrow, steal, whatever you can, get it, defend the place. That's it. You know, this is unfortunately the situation you're in. I trust you guys are going to, do the best and get yourselves out of it. I guess that's unfortunately par for the course with anything in war, I suspect. There aren't any definitive, rules or, you can have all the best preparation, best laid plans in the world, but that doesn't necessarily convert itself into reality. So, it's...
Right. It's true. It's true. And unfortunate at the same time, which is what we're going to see over the next few weeks and months that we talk about everything that's going on in Bestone. But yeah. And then the shot changes once again, and we see Babe standing on the side smoking. You know, the guys are all relaxed. And then we see someone walk by him that has, like, his face bandaged. And Babe just looks at him and just goes, Jesus Christ. And he starts looking around, and then we see a whole, I guess, legion of men starting to walk towards them. And that is how this 5-minute segment ends. So people are going to have to come back tomorrow to find out who these men are and what's going on with it. You know, maybe we'll recognize some of them here or there. Who knows?
Yeah, I think there's definitely some actors in it that you recognize from other things, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, that's probably that's very fair to say. Yeah. So, Lee, is there anything else you wanted to add about this particular 5-minute segment?
Not really. I mean, I think, you know, as ever, you're extremely thorough and forensic in your and I love having the transcript read back to me. Is always great as well. No, I think it's one of my favorite episodes in the whole series. I think it's so beautifully done from beginning to end, really. And a real insight into what the effects of war are in somebody that is so, for me, such a graceful leader, Winters, that just knows when he needs to kind of like pull rank, he does. And they listen to him without any insubordination, which as it should be, but there's just a sense. And even as I say, you have the talking heads saying effectively, I'm doing them an injustice by saying who they are, but they all wax lyrical about his leadership. And you know how he would always be the first to kind of, I think it's when early on in the episode where they have not the ambush as such, but they go after the SS, and Winters goes first. Like, he doesnn't need anyone, he goes first before he gives a signal. Just says everything about what kind of a leader Winters was. And I think that, it is for me personally one of my favorite episodes of the whole series. And that's to say, because it's an extremely high bar throughout, but yeah, for me.
Okay, that makes 100% sense. I completely agree with that. Yeah, that's the way they do this. All right, excellent. Today's segment is World War II movie trivia.
Right.
So we're gonna spin the wheel, and we'll see what trivia questions Lee gets, and we'll see how well you know your World War II movie.
Yeah, I was going to say, what he gets or what he doesn't get is probably more likely, but yeah, let's go for it.
Well, we will have to wait and see. So let's spin the wheel and see what we get. Round and round and round the wheel.
Yeah.
Okay, what 1976 thriller starring Michael Caine is about a plot to assassinate Winston Churchill by German paratrooper?
Michael, 1976. Michael Caine. It probably isn't this, but the only film that I can think of with Michael Caine would be something like the Ipcress Files, but I don't think it is that. So I'm trying to think, what other movie around that time did he have made? You give me a clue, a slight clue.
It also stars Donald Pleasance.
Not at all. I mean, I know Donald Pleasance is a brilliant actor, but no. I'm again. You've once again stumped me completely. Go on.
But I'm not trying to stump you. That's the thing. I want you to be my able to answer these questions.
It does. It exposes me for the, you know, the paper thin movie buff that I am. But yeah, I like to think that I am. But then you go, oh, actually, retrospectively, there's loads of movies I haven't seen or really should see. So yeah, go on, enlighten me. What is the answer?
Okay, the answer is The Eagle Has Landed.
Oh, I do know it. I do know it. I've never seen it, but I do know it. Yes. Oh right, okay. Good. There you go. one to watch.
Okay. All right, so let's spin the wheel and see what your next question is. Round and around and around the wheel go.
Yeah.
So So for your second question, the 1962 movie The Longest Day refers to what day of the war in Europe?
Longest Day.
I mean, this was like a star-studded film all about a day that not the day that will live in infamy, but a day that afterwards everyone will remember. Right.
Yeah. Anyway. Oh, did you mean D-Day?
Of course, D-Day.
I was thinking it was much more technical than that. Okay, yeah.
No. I'm not trying to be too technical here. You know, this simple question. Simple.
Yes. Yes.
Excellent. All right. Let's move on to question three. Wheel and see what we get.
Got a lot of hope.
You have a lot of hope, or you don't have a lot of hope?
Oh no, I have an awful lot of hope.
Good. Hope is a good thing.
It's the hope that kills you. Having a little hope is worse than no hope.
That's true. That definitely makes sense. Okay. The 1958 movie Torpedo Run, okay, it deals with a commander of a submarine that is ordered to shoot at ships which possibly have his wife and daughter on board. Okay. This movie stars both Ernest Borgnine, another actor who is also known as being the father of Superman in the Superman movie from 1978. You know who that actor would be?
Marlon Brando.
Marlon Brando. Okay, who's you're correct. Marlon Brando did play Superman's father. He's Clark Kent's father. Sorry.
Yes. Oh, Clark Kent's father. Oh, right. I thought, is Brando in that? Okay, fine.
No, yeah, but that's very good that you got that. But, you know, I didn't word the question properly. Sorry.
Okay. It's my favorite Superman movie. I have a lot of affinity.
Okay, so now think about who plays Jonathan Kent.
I can sort of see his face. What's? Give me the letter of his first name and see if I can
get it. His initials are GF.
No, okay. I've got no idea. No.
Okay, his first name is Glenn.
Glenn. No, I can't even do a stab in the dark.
And he
No idea.
He shares a last name with both a president and a famous movie archaeologist.
GF. The president, yeah. Oh my god, can you...
I mean, I know you're in England, so it's you know, I can't fault you for not knowing the president.
Yeah, the striking thing is I always consider myself reasonably intelligent, but this is really shining a light.
Okay, just use the other hint that I gave you. Who do you know of as a famous movie archaeologist? The actor who plays the famous movie archaeologist. What's his last name? Yes.
So the only one.
What movie archaeologist can you think of? There's probably only one that's going to come to mind.
Jurassic Park is the one that comes to mind. That's probably not right, is it?
No, not at all.
Oh no, not. Yes. What am I talking? Oh my goodness me! What are you talking about? No. Harrison Ford, of course. What am I talking about?
So what's his name? Put the two together.
Glenn Ford.
Glenn Ford. Perfect. Nicely done.
Glenn Ford. Archaeologist. Oh my goodness me. Wow. Paleontologist probably, but not an archaeologist.
Jeez. That's right. The paleontologist.
Oh my goodness me. Park. Yeah.
That's right.
There you go. Right. I've redeemed myself. I've redeemed you.
Yeah. All right. Let's spin the wheel for your next question. Around and around the wheel goes. Okay, and you get another movie about boats.
Boot.
Sorry. Nice try. It was a good guess without any information there, but that's fine. Okay, the 1963 movie PT-109 is about what future president's work during World War II?
Roosevelt's?
Nope. Try again. Roosevelt was already president during World War II. This is someone who became president 20 years later. Yes. PT-109. It's a famous story about that. It was the current president in 1963 when the movie came out. You know, if that helps at all. Do you know what president was president in 1963? I know I keep asking you presidential questions, but
was it Kennedy? See, Kennedy comes to mind, but I think maybe there was someone.
John F. Kennedy.
Right.
PT-109 is about the heroic he did during World War II.
Oh, it's amazing. You know what? This is amazing for me because I've always thought I would be a pretty good at quizzes. But when you basically have one element of doubt in your mind, you then question everything else that you have in your mind. It's amazing. No, it's great.
I'm sorry that you're fantastic. Not doing better. I'm teaching you, but...
You've saved me from a world of pain of going on any sort of
but I want you to get there. I want you to reach that point. All right, let's spin the wheel for your final question. And around and around and around the wheel goes.
Yeah.
Okay, in the 1953 movie Stalag 17.
Right.
Okay, have you ever seen it?
I've heard of it. No,
have you seen it?
It's one of the most famous, but no, I've not seen it.
Who is the actor that won Best Actor for playing one of the characters?
Oh, man. Not a clue. Okay, go on, give me a first letter of the actor.
Okay, the first name begins with a W and the last name begins with an H.
So I'm thinking of people begin with W first of all, and the name would probably be somewhere like Warren or Dougie. Winston.
The first name is William. Okay,
I mean, again, I'm probably just making up a name. William Houston? It's not, is it? It's not even close.
No.
Has this actor won or been nominated for an Oscar after or before? Is he someone I shouldn't? Yeah, it's okay.
Theoretically, yes. Someone you should know. He was nominated in 1976 for Best Actor in actually I think it was Best Supporting Actor in Network. He was also nominated. What else was he nominated?
William Hurt.
I don't know how old William Hurt would have been in 1980.
Is William Hurt not in Network?
In 1953, no. Okay, so he was nominated three times for Best Actor. He was nominated for Best Actor in this movie, in Network in 1976, and in 1950 for Sunset Boulevard.
Oh, come on.
I think he should have also been nominated for Bridge on the River Kwai, but he wasn't.
Right. I've seen Sunset Boulevard, and I've seen Bridge on the River Kwai.
So think of an actor in Bridge on the River Kwai that could possibly be this one. He's the main actor, and he's one of the main actors in Bridge on the River Kwai also.
Oh, goodness me.
And his first name is William, that you figured out.
No, I mean, I could make it up, but no, I've got no idea. That's so bad. Wow. So clearly my movie knowledge doesn't stem much beyond maybe late 70s, I think, by the sounds of it. But yeah, go on. Who is this?
William Holden.
I'm not lying. I was going to say William Holding. It was a name, but for some reason, I just thought you've just picked that out of nowhere. So, okay. That does reassure me that that name was in my head, but no, I didn't say it out loud. And I'm honest, I'm totally truthful. That name did come to my head, but I was like, I don't think that is someone. I think, you've just made that up because it sounds good. So yeah, there we go. But anyway.
Well, apparently you didn't make that up.
No, I didn't. Not if he's been nominated three times. Dear me. I'm doing the poor fella a very, very great injustice.
All right. So now we will move on to the daily game of Name That World War II Movie, which hopefully you'll recognize whatever movie we talk about this time.
Do you really think I will? Do you?
I have a lot of hope for you. A lot of hope for you.
Yeah, okay. Good. That's it.
Hope is very important.
Indeed.
All right. Yeah. Let's spin the wheel and see what we get. Around and around and around the wheel goes. Okay, you. I think you do have a chance of getting this because it is post-1970s.
Okay. You know what you've done there, Rob? You've beat.
So this is a movie from 2014. Okay. Is directed by George Clooney, starring George Clooney, Matt Damon, Bill Murray, Kate Blanchett, John Goodman, Jean Dujardin, Hugh Bonneville, Bob Balaban. And it's about a group of men during World War II that are sent to go rescue art masterpieces that were stolen by the Germans.
Do you know, I think I've seen this film as well. George Clooney directed it. I got nothing. No, I can't. And you'll say it to me, and I'll say, or maybe I've got it muddled up with something else, but I feel like I've seen this film. I feel like that collection, like that ensemble of actors, I feel like I've seen it. And I know that George Clooney hasn't directed an awful lot of movies. So I should know this. I should. But I'm honest, I don't. No, go on.
All right. Okay, so the answer is The Monuments Men.
No, I haven't seen it. The Monuments Men, right. No.
Okay, I got to say, I'm not the biggest fan of the movie. It had a lot more potential than it realized.
Right.
You know, I found it to be pretty boring, but whatever, that's me. There are people who might like it.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. So, Lee, if anyone wants to get in touch with you, how would they do so?
To get in touch with me. So, I think I mentioned this on the first one. I am on social media of sorts. I'm on Twitter, sorry, X, they call it now, don't they? But
that's fine. I still refer to it as Twitter too. So you're
if you are in any way inclined to seek me out on Twitter, you'll probably see that I tweeted last in probably 2021 or something. So I'm just not a very social media savvy person. I think it's got a brilliant means in terms of kind of communicating work, and you know, if you're basically trying to promote something, or indeed you want to have a conversation with somebody that is a topic that you are passionate about, but I honestly, I steer largely clear of. I signed up reluctantly when I did a TV drama, and the writer of it said, "Oh, you need to get yourself on Twitter. You need to promote this. You need to." And I think I did it for maybe, I think that the initial intrigue lasted for maybe a month, maybe less. And yeah, so by all means, you can find me there, but you'll probably find that I'm as dormant as my brain has seemed to be when it came to the trivia. So yeah, that would be maybe don't ask me any trivia. That would probably be the best thing to kind of impart.
Well, no, by the time they get in touch with you, you know, you'll already be an expert on trivia because you're going to be, you know, working on it between now and then.
Bob, I will be armed and ready. Indeed. Yeah.
That's the way to do it.
Absolutely.
And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to moviearoundminute@moviearound.net. So, until tomorrow, Curry!
Curry!